Get started on your painting project and save big money at Menards. Rust-Oleum's 5-in-1 spray paint lets you choose from 5 unique spray patterns with a twist of the dial, so you can get a professional finish on every project. Save big money on Rust-Oleum spray paint now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane podcast, where queer friends and allies gather to review and discuss the original X-Men comics in continuity order. I hope you will all enjoy my sexy cold voice, because that's happening this month for a never-ending cold voice. I remember that episode of Friends where Phoebe got a cold and it made her sing sexier, so that's really the vibe I'm leaning into. It continues to be a crazy time in America, but we are just going to celebrate today by finding joy in old 50-year-old comic book stories. Today we're going to be doing a script reading, not from the X-Men, but from Avengers number 137, in the middle of the Steve Englehart run of Avengers from July 1975. This is the infamous story where Beast joins the Avengers, and most modern fans probably haven't read it. It's delightful, it's real silly, and there's a lot of male ego. We're gonna have a great time, and we have a huge cast with us today to read this lovely story. The title of the story is We Do Seek Out New Avengers. Steve Englehart's the writer, George Tuska on pencil, Vince Coletta on inks, Phil Rachelson on colors, Charlotte Jetter on letters, and Len Wein is the editor. I am Chad Anderson, and I will be playing the narrator today.
I am Derek Nichols, and I'll be your Thor tonight.
This is Chandler Poling. I am going to be Hawkeye.
This is Corey Thomas. I will be Iron Man.
I'm Ruth Ann Price, and I will be the Scarlet Witch and Shirley.
What's up, everybody? I'm Dominic Middleton. I'll be playing Vision, Black Panther, and Captain America.
It's Jenna Lee, and I will be the Fabulous Wasp.
I am Dr. Daniel Guilford. I am playing Hank Pym, the Yellow Jacket.
You sure are.
Unfortunately or fortunately, I'm super excited to be here. I'm not so excited to be playing this terrible person.
I'm Sarah Sentry. I also don't like Hank Pym. I'm here to play Agatha Harkness and Moon Dragon.
And I'm Taylor Vessel, playing your token mutant of the evening, the Beast.
I'm Warpath Dillon, and I'm going to be Toad and Shirley's husband.
And that's a surprise spoiler for the end, because he's this stranger, but it's really the Toad, so it's okay. We'll talk about it.
I'm Christy Porter, and I will be playing Black Widow and Edwin Jarvis.
And I'm Sean Pratt, and I'm playing Hunky Hercules, Swarmy Swordsman, and Quirky Quicksilver.
The cover by John Romita. Vision gets the cover box. Henry McCoy, the blue furry bludgeoning beast, leaps toward the reader in his blue briefs, yellow eyes glaring, claws extended, as he dodges a bunch of spiky balls. The text tells us, "Gangway and Avengers coming through." Moondragon in a green one piece with a deep V to the navel and hip cutouts, with green gloves and boots, defense herself, her high collar green cape rising around her bald head, her green globe earrings shining. On the ground, Yellow Jacket cradles the unconscious Wasp. Thor lies unconscious, Iron Man struggling to get up. The Avengers are overwhelmed in a stadium of some kind. The letters tell us, once more the order changeth. Enter Moondragon, Yellow Jacket, and the bludgeoning Beast. And there came a day unlike any other, when Earth's mightiest heroes and heroines found themselves united against a common threat. On that day, the Avengers were born to fight the foes no single superhero could withstand. Through the years, their roster has prospered, changing many times, but their glory has never been denied. Heed the call, then, for now, the Avengers assemble! Stan Lee presents The Mighty Avengers. In a suburban kitchen, Shirley busily prepares dinner as her husband gets home and clicks on the television, only to find the face of Thor on the screen.
Hi, honey. Dinner at 6:30. Hard day at the office.
So, Shirley. Nothing a dry martini and a rerun of Hogan's Heroes can't cure. Though, I tell you, if we didn't have cable TV...
Public service message.
We do seek out new Avengers.
Hey, Shirley, come here. You aren't going to believe this.
So, okay, now that we've got your attention, let's go back to where it all began. A time which isn't so very far removed from where our last adventure ended. You can tell because as this Avengers Quinjet and Titanian spacecraft breach Manhattan airspace, their occupants are still blown out of their skulls by it. Two ships fly over New York City, containing four Iron Man and Agatha Harkness aboard one, and Moondragon and Hawkeye on the other. They've just concluded their Celestial Madonna saga, which resulted in the Scarlet Witch and the Vision getting married, and Mantis and the Swordsman marrying in his Kotati tree form. It's a long story. Go look it up. Hawkeye married. Is upset.
Married. Married! Mantis, I was expecting, though an intelligent tree for a groom came out of left field, but Wanda and the Vision took me completely by surprise, that synthazoid sly boy.
Enlightened, more like it, I'd say, to seek a life with my Scarlet Witch.
However that may be, Miss Harkness, the wisdom of our choosing them as Avengers is once more amply demonstrated. Hey, old friend?
Right, Thor! I think you and I can safely take credit for everything.
Well, in the meantime, you yo-yos, somebody over there better take credit for landing your ship.
Aw, oh, Hawkeye, but hearken. Even the Celestial Madonna departed from our rolling sphere. Yon star above Avengers Mansion doth yet shine.
Guess we'll never learn how it got there.
As the Avengers land their ships at the mansion, they see a shining star in the sky. Still a mystery to them. Ah, oh, but you'll learn, gentle reader, if you read The Trial of the Watcher in the latest Captain Marvel, which is not to say that you should stop reading the Avengers. Inside the trusty Edwin Jarvis waits.
Thank Providence you've returned, and you have Miss Harkness. Then Miss Wanda is all right?
Jarvis, she could be no better.
But why, Miss Harkness, I mean, that is...
Sir, these men do not have Agatha Harkness. I walk as ever alone, only through the love of others. A mother's love for her son, perhaps, or a woman's for herself and her man. Only through others may Agatha Harkness know peace. But sometimes her need leads her to overestimate her own aging abilities. I attempted to give your Wanda more than I myself was prepared to receive. And if she were not so infernally durable, and yet she is. So I say to you, gentlemen, your Wanda will never be a great witch, much less a sorceress. But she will be very good. Excuse me.
And me, sirs.
Jarvis follows Agatha Harkness up the stairs. And yes, Virginia, there is a morning after, when everything's just ended and nothing's yet begun. And even so perfect a butler as Jarvis stuffs his foot in his mouth. But that time can often be a period of pure relaxation for the mind as well. So Hawkeye's actually quite annoyed when Thor turns to him and rumbles.
Hell, Avengers, there be urgent business before us. Even recording the Vision and the Scarlet Witch be but gone on holiday, the loss of Mantis and the Swordsman doth leave our ranks sorely depleted. I do recommend we seek out replacement.
You just want to be the leader of a big old band.
Speak for yourself, Johnny Be Good. I'm on Thor's side. Right now, two of us three are only part-timers. The Avengers deserve a better showing than that.
You guys always stick together, don't you?
Maybe, but here's something I'm certain you'll join me on. To wit, I hereby propose Moondragon as the newest Avenger assembled.
Me? You astonish me, Iron Man. Oh, no, perhaps you do not. For Mantis was very dear to all of your hearts, and you see much of her in me. But I warn you, gentlemen, I say I, not this one. And I have been adjudged to have a different destiny from hers. Your confusion of us would dismay me. For you see, I accept your offer. I have had my interest reawakened in this, my native planet. And since I wish to remain here for a time, I'm pleased to call us allies.
As am I, Avenger.
Nuts.
However, ere we initiate another into our midst, I do hereby propose that we invite those who've come and gone to return.
Let's call the Black Panther first, shall we? He was the last one to leave.
Then come on, son of Odin. Let's get it over with before you bust a gut. I still say we're dandy where we are.
The Avengers call up their former members one by one. Black Panther, Quicksilver, Captain America, Black Widow, Hercules, finally Wasp and the Yellow Jacket. But it doesn't go as planned.
Thor, the fine fool's gold of Stark Velvet Morning seems to like the multi-tapestry of desire and disaster that compromises the ledger of life of my people and myself. In this hidden half-slumbering nation state, we proudly proclaim Wakanda. But the amber eyes of reason widen as mild shadows of regret creep across all of the outside worldscape and scream the bleeding need for the Panther's presence at this time.
Nay, and the second ex-Avenger is no more encouraging.
You know my feelings regarding my sister and that android, yet you inform me of their marriage and ask me to leave my wife because of it in the same breath? Are you mad, Thunder God?
This doth bode ill. I had not expected success of an instant, yet neither did I expect such vehemence with the failure.
Well, we're not Tony Stark's security force. Being an Avenger is not just a job, it's a way of life, and you have to be willing to devote a lot of time to it. Not everyone can do that.
Yeah, this ain't the Defenders where people popping in and out. I tried that trip, but if I'm gonna work up any team spirit, I have to have a real team. Listen, I know who to call.
And he dials up the Star-Spangled Avenger.
So, you said when you were Nomad that you'd be back after finishing off the Serpent Squad, Cap.
I know I did, Hawkeye, but I didn't know that then the Red Skull was waiting in the wings after taking another rain check. Sorry.
Then Iron Man calls up his old foe, the Black Widow, who's been adventuring with Daredevil in San Francisco for some time.
So we thought maybe you and Daredevil had worked out your love life, Tasha.
Iron Man, you have no idea how wrong you are. If anything, we're more confused than ever. But we're not ready to break it up as of yet.
And then Thor pays a call to his sparring buddy, the Prince of Power.
Thus, since thou hast been at loose ends of late, Hercules.
And there shall I remain, Thunder God. I have enjoyed myself hugely since I have once more trod this world, and I nurture no desire to limit my freedom of action now.
Then one last call to the Wasp, who's dressed in a form-fitting green dress with a pop of blue at the collar.
Thus, Janet, I do assume that thou and Hank will also wish to retain your leaves of absence?
Why, no, Thor, not at all.
You do not?
No, in fact, I was about to get in touch with you. My bull-headed better half buzzed off with the Defenders and left me behind a while back, and the Winsome Wasp was getting bored just sitting around her assets. I'd like to go adventuring again.
Wonderful. Yet how canst thou be certain Hank will join thee?
Please, Goldilocks. Ours is a happy marriage, and Hank wants to keep it that way.
Marriage, a not uncommon state of affairs, even these days among superheroes. Now look to Rurutu, French Polynesia, and the newlyweds everyone's been waiting to see. In a yellow bikini, Wanda Maximoff runs along the sands while her husband, the Vision, emerges from a changing hut wearing only a green Speedo.
Come out wherever you are.
Wanda, I feel absurd. In my entire life, I've never even thought of wearing a bathing suit or of going swimming.
Oh, there's a first time for everything, darling, as you should know better than anyone. Besides, you look gorgeous.
Well, I don't feel gorgeous. I feel embarrassed. Well, someone sees me like this.
There's no one anywhere near this beach, darling. The natives agreed to stay away to make up for trying to sacrifice me when we were here before. Remember? You're just off balance because you're starting out on a new life, unlike any you or the original Human Torch have ever known, aren't you, Dark Eyes?
In answer, the synthesoid sets his mouth in a stern line, but then on one corner it twitches and turns up, and he turns to his bride and pulls her close to hide his tender smile, and only their senses ever go swimming. Meanwhile, that means they fucked, guys. Meanwhile,
two acceptances out of seven possibles, maybe eight if you count the Hulk, which I don't.
The Hulk. I near forgot that he stood with us when we found the Avengers, Iron Man. How much has changed since that day?
Well, you know why, don't you? It's all the other groups that have sprung out there since then. The X-Men, the Defenders, the Inhumans. We're not the only game in town anymore, and in addition, being a solo superstar is a dream more people have than me.
If you're saying that being an Avenger is out of style, mister...
Hold, old friend. There be reason in his words.
Sure. We're the old guard after all these years. It's easy to take us for granted.
Oh, I don't know, Clint. Your big brown eyes still knock me out.
Huh? Who said that?
And in flies the Wasp in full costume at just a few inches tall.
Me, you handsome brutes. The modern American Tinkerbell herself.
Waspy!
And the miniaturized flesh big boy. Who else could get past all the alarms by way of the keyhole.
How about your name changing, size changing old man for one, lady?
Not anymore. Not since we got home from fighting the Lunatic Legion in Chicago and discovered that the microbe which trapped us at ant size 2 years ago is still in Hank's blood. Nowadays, he stays at one side, except for emergencies. So I just had to let him in behind me.
Time to spin around and surprise again, people! Because you have another unexpected visitor, and this one answers to the name of Yellow Jacket.
Hank Pym, you old son of a gun. How are you, fella? So the Defenders let you go after all?
The Defenders didn't let me go, Shellhead. You can come and go as you please with them, just like a certain archer who fought on their side in the Avengers Defenders clash, but now spends a lot of his time putting them down, from what I overhear.
Hey, are you looking for a stump stinger, buddy? We both split the Avengers to do our own thing, and we both drifted in with that crazy crew, and we both decided not to stay, didn't we, YJ? Think you still got the old stuff, pal?
Yeah, do all right.
The hot-headed archer pulls an explosive arrow out and fires it above the head of his ally, right there in the mansion, aggressive. Yellowjacket ducks the explosion, but then zaps Hawkeye with one of his electric stings, more aggressive.
And even if the life of a research scientist has slowed me down a little, let me invent this cellular disruptor gun, which halts all functions in living tissue for as long as I choose, and works particularly well when stunning hot-headed Bowman. Sorry, Clint, but I didn't feel like proving myself in some mock combat right now, especially if it's not entirely mock. Jan told me you needed the quorum, and she was going, so I came too. But I have to tell you, Thor, that I have come to like a life of research, and if it were solely up to me, I'd opt for spending most of my time on that.
This man just fired a gun that he said blocks all living tissue.
Just for as long as he wishes.
Okay, yeah, please go ahead.
Then we do thank thee for thy sacrifice, though thou couldst have allowed thy wife to come alone.
No.
Smiles Henry Pym, PhD.
Jan and I are a team. We're not together all the time, certainly, but I wouldn't want to be apart from her for any great while.
He's helpless without me, you know.
Adds Jan in a stage whisper.
The big boob would wear the same socks for a month if I wasn't around, but I want to be around, so everything works out great.
She grins. Yellowjacket turns back to the disgruntled Hawkeye, who suddenly doesn't want to fight anymore, and I kind of don't blame him.
In any event, we are both here, even though neither of us understands why you're so hung up on the past. If all the other old Avengers are busy, do what we did when we picked up this guy and found some new Avengers. Just put out the word that you're looking.
Boy, that does it. We've already got one new Avenger today, and now you want to call central casting? Well, I, for one, do not approve. There's still one more former Avenger we haven't contacted, the Black Knight. He may be in the 12th century, but we sure as heck are no strangers to time travel anymore, as we still have access to Dr. Doom's time machine. You do what you want to do. I'm going after the Black Knight.
Well, did somebody say hung up in the past?
Well, he's only been a success with the Avengers, honey. He's bound to resist anything that would change them.
Mayhap, yet that be his concern. Now let us speak of putting out the word.
And so we've reached the explanation for the Thunder God's television appeal. That being the case, we may as well skip ahead to the results. The Avengers regroup to meet any new recruits at
Yankee Stadium?
Aye, Moondragon. 'Tis deserted due to the stadium's reconstruction and securely locked. To provide an excellent arena to test those who come in response to our announcement, and a fine test in and of itself. For only those possessed of skill and determination can reach us herein.
Don't look now, but I think we have our first customer.
A man in a trench coat and tie, a banded hat, and a cigar leaps over the fence with a bound.
Who is he? I don't recognize him in that overcoat.
Who am I? Don't play dumb, you mugs, or I'll have to send some of the boys around, see? Mother of mercy, that'd be the end of you.
That voice? It can't be. It's Edward G. Robinson?
That's right. It can't be, but it's...
That's right. The man is disguised as silent film actor Edward G. Robinson, a real person, a Romanian-American performer and political activist. Only Edward Robinson died in 1973, and this comic came out in 1975. Stunned silence catches the five Avengers as they boggle at the great but late actor standing there, limned in silver moonlight. Is this the supernatural, like the swordsman's resurrection? Imagine they're shocked when the man grabs his head and pulls it off. A lantern mask is yanked free, a trench coat and a shirt are thrown off, and surprise, it's the blue-furred Beast.
Hiya, kids. Hiya. Hiya. Pretty good disguise, huh?
Good Lord. It's the Beast.
The very same. Well, a little older and a lot wiser, maybe, and a whole lot more laid back. But it is more than likely me come to make out an application in hopes of making the team, just like you asked.
Wait a minute. Aren't you an X-Man?
Why? Aren't you an equal opportunity employer? I used to be an X-Man, running around in those colorful costumes and all. That was when I looked human and was entirely too serious. Next to Professor X, I was the group's intellectual, which was pretty funny because I was also the star athlete, what with my anthropoid arms and legs. But none of that apparently was meant to last forever. Being an X-Man was being a student, and in time, we all had to graduate. I moved on to pursue my experiments in genetic mutation at the Brand Corporation, under my maiden name of Hank McCoy.
Hold! Speak out of thy secret identity. We do not require such disclosures.
It's cool, Thunder God. It's cool. It doesn't make any difference to me because I don't have another identity anymore, secret or otherwise. That's the part I was getting to see after I'd been with the corporation for 4 months. I stumbled across a spy plot, which I naturally figured to fight. The trouble was, Hank McCoy's abnormal body was well known by then, so simply slipping on a costume wouldn't be enough of a disguise. Too quickly, I decided to make use of my experimental formula for the chemical cause of mutation, and I mutated the mutant man into a real beast. Only later did I discover that I couldn't change back, that I was trapped in this form forever. At first, I was horrified, of course. I tried everything I could think of to make believe I could go on the way I had been, even to the point of working up rubber masks and gloves so I could pass for Hank McCoy. But eventually, it all got too heavy. I had to drop out of sight and come to terms with my new self. So I did. I let time pass however I wanted. I watched old movies, read some Castaneda, listened to Stevie Wonder, and by and large, put my cruel fate out of my mind. After a while, I found I had a perspective on things without my even working on it. I figured that this was what I am now, so I might as well make the best of it. That includes realizing that any mask I wear, even Hank McCoy's, only pretend, so I can pretend to be anybody I want. You should see my Bogart. I also realized one more thing. Very surprising. I like superheroing, and I like it with a group.
Okay, y'all. So this man saw an ad on TV,
yep.
Put together a silent film actor's latex mask, jumped in, and then prompted to give a 7-minute monologue as everyone
It's a desperate theater kid energy.
So. Yes.
During the mutant's long speech, we see a series of flashback images. Beast in his human form, flipping around in his blue and red costume. Beast working with chemicals in a lab. We see his transformation into the blue beast, including an image that looks like he's pulling off green mossy shorts. It's very odd. Then Beast watching old movies and reading books in his latex costume, and presumably listening to Stevie Wonder. But now here we have our own newly assembled Avengers. Thor, the God of Thunder, wielding Mjolnir in his classic costume with winged helmet. Iron Man, the armored Avenger, in his gold and red, during that time when he had a face mask with a nose on it, and his identity was still secret. Moondragon, the bald telepath, in her flowing green cape. Wasp, in her red leotard with red gloves and boots, her blue tights underneath, small wings sprouted from her back. Yellowjacket, in his black and yellow, with shoulder pads reminiscent of insect wings. Yellow goggles and ear antennas matching the yellow insect insignia on his chest. And now, the Beast, and they are ready for their first battle. For they aren't alone in Yankee Stadium.
Then I hope you'll like to die with this group, monster.
Huh? Huh? Who's crabbing my ass?
He's in the upper tier, there, in the shadows by the pillar.
Make no move, Avengers. I warn you, I have taken a seat in the grandstand to watch a game played before me, a game you will play against these hover minds I have massed invisibly around you while you chattered. As I render them visible, note their vast number, how they cover the football field to a height of 50 yards. The sports is that only 1 in 5 is armed, but each of those contains unearthly power. You have 6 minutes to reach and disarmament lever behind the mines, for then I shall detonate everything manually.
This is a plot, y'all.
Yeah.
All around, the heroes materialize beach ball-sized spiky mines, far more dangerous than they look, as they are about to find out.
We're in for it, folks. I know that voice.
As do I, beasts. 'Tis the stranger. His weaponry is mighty indeed against men, so it must needs be the son of Odin that doth confront them first. Neelnor will follow a direct course, which I can alter but little, compelling me therefore to strike every mine in my path. Still, most of them harmless, and as an immortal...
But just after taking off, Thor strikes one of the explosive mines. Patam!
That was more than I expected, stranger. But the God of Thunder shall press on.
And then he hits another. Wham! There's an explosion, and the mightiest among them is now down for the count.
Good lord, he couldn't take it. He's down. That blasted know-it-all. Why didn't he wait? Think, my armor's almost as strong as his skin, and I do have maneuverability. But no, he can't resist the challenge. So now it is up to... Wait a minute, the mines are drifting, disturbed by the explosion.
Those words are on his tightened lips, but he never gets them out. Iron Man takes off and glom, another explosion. Iron Man drops like so much scrap iron, and shock gives way to one breathless voice.
The two strongest Avengers? Down before they even got started? That's going to be a tough act to follow.
Now just hold on! Those mines are bobbing around like corks up there.
Don't be a party poop, lover. I'm the only one left who can fly.
I can fly?
But you shouldn't, because you'd have to shrink. So I'm elected. Relax now. I was one who wanted adventure, and Wasp a real small target. The thing is, I haven't flown very much in the past 2 years, and these balls are moving fast compared to my speed. Hard to dodge.
And she hits another explosion with a wham!
Jen!
Oh no!
Jen!
Halt, Henry Pym! Useless! He is heedless of his own personal safety, but there must be no more waste. A total mind thrust will stop him.
As Yellowjacket rushes into the mines, Moondragon stops him, zapping his brain to knock him down. Thus, only two Avengers remain. The two newest Avengers, Beast and Moondragon.
And now, Beast, you and I must think this through dispassionately before any more hasty action is attempted.
All right. But I have been thinking it through, and over and under and around, and I always come up with the same answer. I am a beast now, Moonshine, with eyesight far sharper than human, and speed and agility far beyond that. The stranger has us running this movable maze like rats, so maybe an animal can succeed where gods and insects failed.
He lopes forward in his normal crouch, cautiously, then suddenly leaps and dives and throws himself into a never-ending series of twists and turns, executed almost as fast as Moondragon's tightened, trained senses can record them. He claimed to have been laid back, but there is no hitch in the smooth rhythm of his motion, no uncertainty in his choice of route. His is a natural ability, little affected by disuse, and though Moondragon earned her title as Titan's foremost female athlete, she sees it all with silent awe. The Beast, too.
Oh my stars and garters! I did it! I think I'm gonna have a terminal case of jellied knees after I trip this switch.
Instantly, the sinister sphere shoots skyward, but has safety come too late?
Iron Man's alive!
Yeah, and Thor as well, despite his underestimation of the foe.
But Jan! Jan won't wake up! I can barely find her pulse!
Blast you, stranger! Come down here and fight like a man!
And then their foe appears in a yellow energy hue. The stranger! Except it's not. A space god, a billion alien minds projected into one form, with white hair and a mustache, wearing a red tunic, green boots, and a green cape, his legs and arms bare as he floats above the heroes.
Not like a man, Yellowjacket, but like that which I am to man, a stranger. My game has offered me amusement, but not the anticipated pleasure of Avengers' deaths. So I appear before you solely to rectify matters. The bald woman does not alone possess the mastery of the mind.
The stranger throws a psychic blast toward Moondragon, who counters it with one of her own.
No, but you will have to prove your superiority on that score, alien.
Will. There's no doubt of it. From what she showed us in the Thanos War, the girl's good, but she's outclassed by a mile this time.
We must needs charge the churl. Now, while the priestess yet hold them at bay.
And yet, all at once...
Wretched female, you try my patience. I have a better plan. There will be another time for it. Another place. Mark my words.
She hath driven him hence.
You have not finished with the stranger.
The stranger ascends skyward, disappearing in a blip. Hank Pym responds, but to an empty sky. The others only stare. They've all survived their first test as a team, but the crumpled form in Hank Pym's arms may well soon change that deceptive tally. It's a sobering beginning, for his young wife, the Wasp, has been gravely injured. Next time at Avengers 138... .. To be continued. Let me hear, first of all, how does reading an Avengers story differ from reading an X-Men story for each of you? It's a very different vibe, right?
Very hammy.
Yeah, there's a camp and silliness here that a little more cape action.
There's a certain amount of sass from the narrator alone, which is just a weird, yes, Virginia, there is a next morning. Like the narration choices are wild. Sarah Century gets to come aboard to play one of my all-time favorite characters, like literally maybe my top five. I love Moondragon.
Oh, it was fine. I like Moondragon quite a bit. She's my favorite. I like her because she shows up to kind of prank all of the men and eventually ends up dating her himbo wife, Philibel.
Our listeners cannot see you, Sarah, but would you like to show us what a mind thrust looks like on camera?
Like, I don't know. Oh, wow. Like a lean sexy. In.
I think there's a real like this energy happening.
Like really mad, kind of like her eyebrows are always doing that like point down thing in the middle, and they're just and she's like,
Ruth Ann and Dominic, we get to see Wanda and the Vision more in upcoming scripts. But what was it like to play these two on their honeymoon and their cute little swimsuit scene?
I mean, it's great to be on a honeymoon, and it's lovely to wear a bikini in, you know, the winter in Canada. So,
yeah, it's always good to see, you know, Vision and Scarlet Witch together, you know, especially in like their beginning phases of their marriage and honeymoon and everything. So I thought it was fun.
You know, for Vision fans, the scene in this issue, he's been around 60 years, but there's something jarring about seeing him in a swimsuit.
I like it. I appreciate
he looks
it.
Really hot. He does. But it's you're like, oh, that's not a look I picture for the Vision. And Wanda's like, remember that time the people of Rurutu tried to kill me? Now they've promised to leave us alone on the beach.
I think the Vision, it was, you know, in modern days, he's got such a more of a metallic sheen to him, whereas back then it was a little more matte. And so like when I was like looking through the issue, like it took me a second to put two and two together that it was the Vision.
Okay. Now in order of male ego, we'll go least offensive to most offensive across the list. Derek, what was it like to have Thor be the voice of reason?
That was strange. Like, so Thor in all of his history has had so many different versions. So this 70s version is kind of new to me. And it was to see him try to, he's not the best leader. I mean, granted, he's a king, but like, you just can't, I don't put him in charge of people because he just wants to do his own thing anyway. So I did appreciate how he did kind of like pick up on the yellow jacket wasp situation. At least I hope I was reading into it like he did. So
he's balancing a lot here as like the only voice of reason in some ways. Then we jump to Iron Man and his nose mask. Corey, what was it like for you to play Shellhead?
It was actually a little tougher than I thought it was going to be because as I started to try to understand 60s Iron Man as opposed to RDJ's Iron Man is a lot like G.I. Joe, so to speak. So it made it really easy to attach something to and, you know, speak from his voice. It's interesting that I think that this Tony is, he's starting to feel what Hawkeye was saying about the Avengers not being the only people around anymore. And I felt or saw or read a little bit of a desperation to stay relevant there for him as well.
There's something so silly about this era of Iron Man. It's the nose mask, and like he regularly fights on roller skates in this era, which is crazy.
Oh no.
Pops them out of the bottom of his armor, like
right up middle-aged man in heelys.
Continuing the male ego, the next least offensive, this is Beast joining the Avengers. This is why we're spending time on this show. We've been crafting Beast stories for over 3 years, and this is the beloved era of Beast. When people remember the Beast that they love, this is where it starts. He goes through here and then all through the Defenders, and in fact, the Beast in the X-Men now, post-Krakoa, they've reverted him to that era of Defenders Beast that we love.
You know, I think from listening to your show, Chad, you've really kind of given me a new appreciation for Hank McCoy, because of the original five, he was always sort of my least favorite. But I mean, the latex masks alone is just such a kooky detail that I love to see it brought up again here. But yeah, it was interesting to, I was thinking about this earlier, you know, be the first X-Men to join the Avengers. And you know, he does it in such a like a cavalier way. But I think if you kind of think about the psychology at the time, like not only did he mutate, but he changed from the person that he was. And so now he he's, you know, kind of avoiding the X-Men, avoiding his past, and so kind of embracing this new quote-unquote laid-back persona that he's trying to perpetuate. It doesn't quite work, but
I'm chill now. I do bong rips. It's all good.
It's cool.
I'm cool, and you're just like, Hank, you are not cool. Shut up.
Like, yes, he is. He has a Humphrey Bogart impression.
Moondragon having dialogue. Moondragon is like with him on the panel and keeps being like, and like he's just like bah, 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 bah.
He's talking. This is Beast's era of like mutant pride, right? Like, I'm gonna take off all the costumes and I'm just gonna go be me. I'm gonna use my name. I'm gonna dance around in my underwear. I'm gonna make people fall in love with me. Like, look at me, the freaky mutant on the Avengers. Like, I kind of love this hero bend for him. But even in 1975, the decision to put him in an Edward Robinson latex mask. This is a book for children. Even in 1975, kids did not know who fucking Edward Robinson was, which is just a crazy choice.
I mean, the whole book kind of had this weird tone to it. Like, this was a very expressive narrator. Like, this was a narrator who, like, really, like, knew the world and was trying to, like, give winks to the audience. Like, it just felt very, like, the narrator was a character of their own.
Then we jump to Hawkeye, who is going through similarly kind of what Iceman's been going through with the Avengers. If you're listening to the main script readings, Iceman's like, fuck you, new X-Men, we're the original team. Hawkeye's really like having some attitude issues in this issue.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I've been playing a lot of Marvel Rivals, and so Hawkeye's a character in this game. So I felt like his voice was just living in with, you know, for the past number of weeks, I've heard his voice yelling at me. So, but as far as this version, you know, I understand. He kind of is like, he's jealous that people are off getting married and that they're off on vacations and they're retired. He's like, why can't I do that? He's like, why do we have to build the team back up again?
This is the bully at school who like slaps a kid across the face, but then the kid punches him in the fucking nose afterward and breaks his nose. Hawkeye shoots his like little arrow at the ceiling, and then Yellow Jacket's like, yeah, here's a cellular disruptor that's gonna block tissue growth, bitch. Hawkeye storms out and he means it. He's gone for the next several issues.
He just got 10 years zapped off of his life.
Like, he literally goes back in time to try to find the Black Knight in the 12th century, but he accidentally lands in the Old West where he's boyfriends with the two-gun kid for a little while. We'll get there in the script readings eventually, but he means it. He literally goes back in time.
It's so Army of Darkness.
I might charge out if Hank Pym showed up too.
So. I just like how he's so dramatic that when he just walks away from the team, he walks away all the way to another time. He's just like, yep. I'm so gone. You're kidding. Just find me.
Now, Hank Pym is a character that is beloved for many reasons, but also very problematic. In the 60s, he is originally Ant-Man, then Giant Man, then Goliath, and then Yellow Jacket. And he's already created Ultron, who's a mass murdering robot. And while he's mentally ill as Yellow Jacket and has forgotten who he is, the Wasp then takes that opportunity to marry him before he remembers who he is and can say no. He's twice her age. He's now like living with a medical condition where he can't shrink. And his wife's like, hey, honey, let's go back to the Avengers. He's later canonically established as bipolar. And you can read the next several issues with Yellow Jacket as him having a severe manic episode. You'll see when we get there. It begins here and then it goes crazy.
We had some marriage counseling before this. So we came prepped. It was so fun. We were sending each other the voices that we were trying to do. I wanted to do transatlantic, but I couldn't do it. But I tried as close as I could. But it was really fun. I love Jan. She's a real go-getter. She knows how to get what she wants, and I respect that. I think Hank's the worst, but she kind of like uses him. She's like, I know that he'll come because I want to go. So like, come on.
He's so dependent on me.
She's like, he wants to keep the peace in our marriage. And then a minute later, he's like, yeah, I kind of like having Janet around sometimes. And she's like, you big boob, you'd forget to change your socks.
I love that so much.
I think I really tried to channel, I am the smartest man in the room. And I know that I'm the smartest man in the room. And you are all so lucky to be in my presence. And
are you talking to us right now? Because we're...
Yeah, it's the only one that himself is doctor.
Not at all.
we go back to a character that hasn't been on my show in a little while, but I love him very much. It's Mortimer Toynbee, the Toad. Toad is in the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. He and Magneto get taken up to space by the Stranger. Magneto escapes and leaves Toad on that planet. And then later, Magneto goes back. He and Toad come to Earth. Toad then turns against Magneto and like kicks him into the ocean. And then he's like hanging out with Vision and Scarlet Witch for a little while. They get kidnapped by Archon, and Toad gets left there for a while too. So Toad in this era has been missing for a long time. Later writers will establish he has full access to both the Stranger and to Archon's technology, which he uses first to do this little caper. But Dylan, what was it like to play the Toad posing as the Stranger? And what were your thoughts on his dastardly villainous plot of spiky explodey balls?
It was weird to try to play Toad being something that he's not, which is a super powerful person. But I mean, he's probably just emulating Magneto, who was his like master for the longest time. It was fun to be a version of, I didn't know this happened to Toad. So I had, as soon as the script came up, I was like, what? Who am I? Yeah, Toad is always fun.
The other infamous thing Toad does with the Stranger's technology is when Wanda is 9 months pregnant, Toad decides to go try to marry her, and he builds himself a Toad armor, and he shows up, he fights all the heroes, he storms his way in and sees Wanda 9 months pregnant and goes, yuck, you're fat, never mind, and he leaves.
Oh my gosh. I guess now that you know I'm getting all this history on Toad, I do love how they used him then in the Trial of Magneto during the Krakoa era, because he has had this long crush on Wanda, and then he gets framed for it.
Yes.
He's such a romantic, though. He fell in love with Husk at one point and did all sorts of, you know, things to try to keep her and make that happen. He's a true romantic at heart. He just can't really do anything.
Go see the Trial of the Toad on Gray Malkin Lane if you want deeper thoughts. I love this character very much. Now, there's method to my madness here. We had Sean Perrett as Hercules and Christy Porter as the Black Widow, who both made a very brief appearance here, but they're going to be in our next script reading. We're going to read Champions number 1, where Hercules and Black Widow are both members of the team. So it was delightful to have you both here, and I like that you got to play just kind of a smattering of other roles. Do you want to share your experience in the Avengers for a couple of pages, friends, before we jump to the Champions world together?
Yeah, anytime I can pull out a silly accent. Chad knows this. I got to do baby voice with the LCD and Alfred episodes. So, you know, anytime you need a silly voice, please call me up. I had no idea that Jarvis and Agatha Harkness were maybe a thing. I kind of ship it.
Iron Man calls up and is like, hey, Black Widow, we thought maybe you and Daredevil had worked out your love life.
No, it's worse than ever. Do either of those characters have a history of like successful relationships? No.
Nope.
Come on.
You're not allowed to be okay.
And Sean as Hercules, that was so fun.
Yeah, I've never felt like more of a man than when I was voicing Hercules. I just wish we got more of the Doths and the, you know, some of the Thor type talk that we get more in Champions. So I'm excited to do that.
On the Champions, Hercules is really pushed as like the main character, at least in the first issue. He is like front and center in all of the action, but we get Iceman and Angel and Ghost Rider as well. As we are kind of beginning to wrap up our conversation, I'd love to hear any final kind of thoughts. Are there parts of today's script that were just ridiculous that we haven't pointed out? Any favorite moments or any questions you guys like or comments you guys have for each other just based on your performances today?
My favorite part is when Beast shows up in full geesh and somebody's like, I know that voice. It's silent actor Edward G. Then how do you know that voice?
My question was, was the challenge just to get into Yankee Stadium? What was going to go on there?
Yeah, so that's where they had their membership drive, but then Toad apparently snuck spiky balls all around them while they weren't paying attention. Toad's up there needing attention. He's like, one in every five balls will explode, but also you have 6 minutes to reach the lever before I blow them all up. Like,
well, it was 12 minutes, but the Beast took up so much time with his monologue.
Toad was like, oh my God, I have to interrupt. I have dinner plans.
Toad's up there in his Stranger cosplay waiting to get a word in. Like, God damn it, I already set the timer.
The fact that they have to say that Moondragon's bald every time she is on panel, they're just like, she's bald as shit, just in case anybody forgot. She doesn't have a single hair on her head. Not one. It's amazing.
And I also like that she's like, she just got turned down as the Celestial Madonna, who's really Mantis. Yeah. And she's like, you guys, I am not fucking flying mantis. I will not say this one. I am not her. I am my own woman.
Hawkeye storms out and goes and gets like a no bald chicks leg sticker because he's so mad that she gets put on the team. And she's just like, shut up. It's so fun.
Sarah's Agatha, your voice was amazing.
Thank you.
This is Agatha in her tired, I'm 190 years old yes. era. I feel like Aunt May and I apart on the panel. We're both 190.
I'm going to go like Dom 52. This English man.
But canonically, Aunt May's only like, what, 55 when she first comes
yeah.
on?
Sarah, are Jarvis and Agatha Harkness smashing?
Oh, I hope so. Doesn't she have such a hard time on the TV series with her beautiful lover who she can't make it work with? I'm just hoping that she's hooking up with Jarvis. Also, I love Jarvis. Oh my God, what a great character. So, I mean, good for her, if so.
Ross yeah, also Jarvis. Got some really adorable lines through this one. It's really fun to see Janet so peppy before she's unconscious and in a coma for the next several issues. So
yeah. What? How many?
You'll be back soon, but she's out of it for a minute.
Oh, they had too many girls on panel, so you know.
It's comic relief.
The bald one is there now. So
so we're going to follow up on this script reading in a period of time. I haven't scheduled that just yet, but within 2 to 3 months. So we're going to be kind of rotating between X-Men, Avengers, and Champions on the show with different casts this year. And it's so fun to have a reason to hang out with so many friends at the same time. So I'd love to hear any final thoughts as we're beginning our wrap up. But as we are wrapping up, if everybody can also make sure to let people know where they can find you online. And is there anything you want to plug? We're going to put this out at the beginning of April.
All right. So I have too many social medias. You guys can find me mainly on Instagram, Dominic Jamil M. Let's see. We got TikTok, DJ Middleton 44, Twitch, Dom901. Anything I have coming up, not that I can think of, but see me at your nearest con now. I might be there.
Yeah. So you can find me online at Taylor_TheBookstaboy on Instagram. Folks listening, I'll have just met some new friends at WonderCon. And then I will also be at the Uncanny Experience this summer.
Fully expecting you cosplaying as Blue Furry Beast dressed as Edward Robinson.
No.
Cracking all the wig up. And there's another wig.
There needs to be a face reveal.
Mm-hmm. Practice your Bogart, Taylor. I'm expecting it.
I am Curls Comics on Instagram with a Z. It is so wonderful to see everyone and talk to everyone. I will be at Uncanny this summer. Woo woo. Junior year, baby.
So I'm Sean Perrette. You can find me on Solving for X and X-Men Task Podcast. We just started X-Men Evolution Season 3 just in time to get you ready for Uncanny Experience.
I'm Derek Nichols. You can follow me on Instagram at Derek J. Nichols, and then on Blue Sky at Derek Hart's BFLO. I'll be at Uncanny this summer, and then hopefully FlameCon a little bit later on. It's April. Earth Day is coming, so get involved with a local environmental organization. The planet's super important.
Look at you looking ahead. I love that.
Chandler, I am a multitude of things. You first of all, if you want to find me personally on social medias, I am never 5get. That's never the number 5get, so you don't 5get it. I am a co-host of X Reads, an X-Men Experience podcast with my co-host Chris, and I'm also one of the co-founders of the Uncanny Experience. It's super flattering to hear a bunch of people say that they're going to come to the show in July, because this is a little event that Dylan and I and Chris started, and like the fact that everybody's excited to go is so flattering.
Yeah, I'm Dylan, or Warpath Dylan, on all social media. So if you just look up Warpath_Dylan, DYLAN, you'll find me. I am the co-host of House of X podcast and To Me My X-Men podcast. I also created a Facebook group a gazillion years ago. It's called House of X. I'm also a co-founder of Uncanny Experience. I'm so excited that so many of you are going.
I'm Sarah Century. I really like playing characters that are kind of mean and kind of gay. This was really fun for me as a result. They were both kind of mean and kind of gay, and I really liked it. I'm glad to be here. Find me on social media. That's on you. That has nothing to do with me. If it's April 4th, then that means I just released a new zine, which is about lesbian vampires, and it's called My Wild Heart Bleeds With Yours, which is a Carmilla quote. You can order it at sarahcentury.gumroad.com, and I highly recommend you do so, because I use a lot of really fun word amalgamations, such as murder fuck and, you know, others. But murder fuck is good. So
Dr. Daniel Guilford, I am not on socials, but you can find my work if anywhere you hear information about climate change. I'm out there communicating around climate very often, and I will be at the Uncanny Experience.
I bet X-Men fans would love to see Yellow Jacket.
Not going to happen.
They would not.
I'm Christy Porter. I am a sometimes journalist, sometimes producer, sometimes cosplayer, always a nerd. As far as stuff coming out, one of the first comic shorts I ever wrote is getting a second printing. It's going to be on Kickstarter, called Buy Visibility. I don't have exact dates yet, but really excited about that. That was a story short I did. It was all about bisexual people and their experience with my partner. So that Philip Seavey, who drew it. So pretty fantastic stuff. You can find me on Blue Sky at Christy Porter and on Instagram at Porter Geeks Out.
What's that? Your partner is X-Men artist Philip Seavey?
I mean, I wasn't going to name drop. But I'm here for my own accomplishments, Chad.
Yes, you are. And you're a talented and phenomenal writer yourself.
I'm Ruth Ann Price. I'm a librarian outside of Toronto, which means you will not see anything of me. You can follow me on Instagram at Hedda Dabbler. I dabble. That's why. You just missed seeing me present on culinary literacy at the Ontario Library Association Super Conference. So it's very sad for you to have missed that. I was great. And in July, if you want to see me, I will be at the North American National Irish Dance Championships, which has absolutely nothing to do with geek culture and X-Men, but we'll be in DC. And if you need wig tips, the Irish dancers have got you covered. We can help you with that.
Lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I keep my own social media private because I got kiddos. This group's welcome to add me. I'm so grateful for talented, creative, safe, wonderful nerd gatherings like this. This show really charges me up and makes the work I'm doing in my own life, raising children and working with the queer community, myself as a therapist, balance out in the ether. So I'm so thankful for all of you. Thank you for nerding out with me this evening. Gray Malkin _ Lane on Instagram is where you can primarily follow the show. Coming up in April on Gray Malkin Lane, we will be following this episode with another Beast story from Marvel Team Up number 38. The writer of Classic X-Men, the book, is going to be joining me as the guest. So, okay, everybody, thank you so much for listening. We will see you all back here in a few minutes on Gray Malkin Lane.
Get started on your painting project and save big money at Menards. Rust-Oleum's 5-in-1 spray paint lets you choose from 5 unique spray patterns with a twist of the dial, so you can get a professional finish on every project. Save big money on Rust-Oleum spray paint now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane podcast, where queer friends and allies gather to review and discuss the original X-Men comics in continuity order, which means we are living in the early to mid 1970s in 2025. And we get to read some delightfully stupid stories about some delightfully stupid characters. I am extremely nostalgic about the issue we are about to read, which is Champions number 1. I'm going to guess most of my guests here had never read this before, or if you had, it had probably been more than 20 years. This is this crazy story. It's a hodgepodge team of superheroes put together by some creators who just were taking the characters that weren't being used by anyone else and trying to make them into a team. And it's really fun. Champions number 1 is a delightful romp. We're going to have a great time. It was released in October 1975, written by Jenny Blake under the name Tony Isabella, with Don Heck on pencils, Mike Esposito on inks, Petra Goldberg on colors, Dave Hunt on letters, and Marv Wolfman on the edits. I am Chad Anderson, and I will be your narrator today.
Hi, I'm Mike Rossi. I will be playing the part of Angel today.
Scott Free, and I am playing the most important champion, Bobby Drake, Iceman.
And the most heterosexual, clearly.
Painfully heterosexual.
I'm Sarah Starshine. I will be playing the Harpies and the Amazon leader.
I'm Christy Porter, and I will be playing Black Widow.
I'm Kevin Canary, and I will be playing Ivan Petrovich. And Richard Finster and Cerberus.
Hi, I'm Num One. I'll be playing Venus and Woman number 2.
I am Michael Hamm, and I will be playing the Ghost Rider.
I'm Sean Pratt, and I'll be playing Hercules.
I'm Kalen Batia, and I'm a triple threat by playing the Mutate, Pluto, and Unnamed Student.
I want to get a quick pulse here. Who had read this before doing the prep work for this script reading? So it's literally just like Scott, Kalen, and I. This is like new, or Kevin too. This is like brand new material for most of you. Okay. Delightfully fun. Oh, Christy, you've seen it too?
I mean, I've read it.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to jump in. Champions number one. On the cover, we see five unlikely heroes gather in a new action-packed first issue. This is it, the pulse-pounding origin of the most sensational new supergroup of all. Front and center, it's Hercules, shirtless, with one orange sash, a brown headband, a brown belt adorned with a golden lion belt buckle, an orange and green skirt, and boots that move all the way up to his pelvis in striated leather straps. He takes up the most space, flexing and pointing while yelling,
"Onward, my comrades! Time has come to face our greatest foes."
Behind him swings the Black Widow in skin-tight black from her neck to the tips of her fingers and toes, with a belt of golden circles and two golden bracelets that fire her widow's web and her widow's sting. Her dark red hair cascades behind her as she swings against a golden sun backdrop. Angel flies forward, hands outstretched, in a red leotard and yellow tights, red boots and gloves, yellow sleeves, and a red headband, a deep V all the way down to his pelvis. His feathered wings billow out behind him. I know Mike Rossi was planning on this cosplay, if only he'd had enough time. Ghost Rider is here with his motorcycle tricked out and decorated with a white skull shield in front of him, the headlights looking like eyes, a carving over the front wheel like a nose. Smoke billows behind his machine as Ghost Rider, dressed in a skin-tight black spandex suit, looks frightening. His face, an expressionless skull that is literally on fire. And Iceman. The mutant generates a frozen bridge of ice beneath him as he propels forward, his own body covered in form-fitting ice, though you can still see his briefs, boots, and gloves. Who to thank for this masterpiece? Gil Kane and Dan Adkins. And now let us begin. Stan Lee presents the most power-packed premiere of all in this, the mighty Marvel Renaissance. The world still needs champions. Starring the Avenging Angel, the deadly Black Widow, the doom-defying Ghost Rider, Hercules, Prince of Power, the indomitable Iceman, and guest starring the astounding Venus. On the title page, the champions run at the reader in basically the same layout, this time before a backdrop of cosmic space. We move to the picturesque exterior of a prestigious university. Two men stroll the UCLA campus this sunny autumn morning. In the past, the world has known them as mutants, or freaks, or renegades, or on rare occasions, as world savers. But we have seen them in all these roles before. Today, they are merely two confused young men. Warren Worthington's wings are strapped down under his brown jacket and collared black shirt. Robert Drake has on an orange sweater and blue jeans.
It's not working for you either, is it, Bobby?
Good job, Warren. Professor X was great, getting me a scholarship here and all, but I guess college isn't what this little mutant is looking for. I'd go back to the X-Men.
Except they aren't the same X-Men that we grew up with, I know.
I read in the paper how Hank is making a big in the Avengers. Maybe...
Come on, little buddy, do you really think we'd fit in with that crew? Face it, this Flyboy popsicle combination just isn't cut out to do somebody else's thing. Holy Hannah!
I see it too, Warren.
It's some kind of hole in midair, and look what's pouring out of it.
These two confused young men come across a random hole in the air. The students in the area panic as a hole in space opens up, grows wider, and four green, scaly winged women with fangs, claws, and massive blue wings burst through, wearing purple dresses and blue gloves, their green hair unkempt, their feet resembling those of birds. It's a smeckle of harpies from Grecian legend. And I don't know what a group of harpies is technically called, but I just made them a smeckle of harpies for the purpose of this episode. You're welcome. They immediately begin attacking civilians. The harpies scream.
The goddess, mortals, hand over Venus or face the wrath of the harpies. Where is the man-child? Answer or die.
The man-child. Iceman hits one harpy with an ice ball to the head. Thud! At a reminder from Angel, he ices up. His clothes change to ice and break off of him.
Bobby, you saved that student, but you can't fight them in your civilian identity. What if somebody sees you? What about your parents?
No sweat, Mr. Worthington. By the time anybody figures out where that ice bolt came from, they won't see Bobby Drake. They'll see the Iceman. Whoops. Scratch one set of freeze-dried clothes.
Hold them, pal, while I get into costume.
Move it, Wings, because it looks like Iceman and the Angel are back on the charts.
Destroy the icy one.
As the pack of harpies closes in a series of attacks, Iceman generates an ice sled and slides it into some while freezing the air around another, making her crash with a clunk. But another slams into him as Angel flies in full costume. A few punches is all it takes to free Iceman from the grip of the harpies.
Sorry, lady, but as fast as you gals are, my ice sled is faster. And that's not all I've got up my frozen sleeve, Gruesome. Catch my snowdrift, Wink.
You boast too much, youth. At him, sisters.
Yug.
Her claws will slice him to ribbons.
Like blazes they will, ugly. Not with the Angel on the scene.
Huh? Warren's not wearing his mask. Somebody's bound to recognize him.
You okay, Tiger?
Yeah, but let's get out of here before your cover is blown.
No way, friend. This is a decision I made after Mom died. No more hiding. For better or for worse. From here on in, the Angel goes public. Besides, our fans over there are making making retreat a decidedly difficult venture.
Kill them! Kill them!
A very weary woman gazes out over the UCLA campus this sunny autumn morning. In the past, she has been known as a spy, a jet setter, and even a superheroine. Today, however, she essays a new role.
Honesty time, Ivan. What do you think my chances are?
Job applicant. She waits patiently for her interview, trying to push from her mind the knowledge that once again, she has been forced by what and who she is to leave a man she loves. Natasha Romanova looks out a window with melancholy, wearing her skin-tight black suit beneath a plaid gray skirt and black belt. And that is accessorizing, folks. Her father figure, Ivan Petrovich, is dressed in a full gray suit and black boots, lounging at a desk nearby.
Relax, sweetheart. The ad said they needed someone to teach Russian to the kiddie. And unless you've forgotten our mother tongue, you're a shoo-in for the job.
I hope you're right, old friend. We need this job. We're just about broke. More than that, I need this job badly.
She is a highly capable individualist who has never really found her place in the sun. Who she is the Black Widow.
Why, Tosh? To help you forget Matt?
That's not it, Ivan. I don't want to forget Matt Murdock. What we had was good while it lasted. We pushed our luck, that's all. Kept the game going too long.
No, I wouldn't call it a game, kid. Because even this old fogey can see that you're still in love with Hornhead. Maybe? Huh?
There's this unearthly glow coming from Ivan. There's some kind of portal appearing in this very room and armored women are charging forth from it.
Another portal opens and an army of warrior women pass through, dressed in golden headgear with golden belts over their tunics and skirts, leaving their shoulders and legs bare. They have bracelets, armbands, necklaces, and boots, and they each carry golden daggers. It's a bustier of Amazonian warrior women from Greek legend. And yes, I did make up the word bustier for this gathering as well. Their leader commands the army.
We have come for Venus. Woman, we know she is near. Conceal her only at the cost of your own mortal life.
As Black Widow takes time to strip her skirt off, Ivan socks the Amazon leader in the jaw, then tries grabbing her from behind, but the hilt of a dagger is driven right into his skull, knocking him unconscious.
I don't like the way you're waving that pig sticker around, beautiful. So, here's looking at you. Tosh, strip for action. I'll hold them off until you... Ugh!
He just told her to strip for action, you guys.
That's how you get ready for action.
Good work, warrior.
General, the one who was with the man carrion is poised for combat. Shall we deal with her?
No, warrior. If the mortal seeks battle, she shall find it. On the tip of my sword.
I gather you're used to terrifying your opponents with that oversized knitting needle. Well, here's a flash for you. The widow doesn't scare.
Just outside the door, a blonde woman in a green mini dress with a golden belt and golden boots is listening. This is the virginal Venus, the goddess of love, but in disguise.
Welcoming prospective Russian teachers isn't really a job for UCLA's newest humanities professor, but I want to meet the famous Natasha Romanoff. I seem to have acquired an almost human curiosity for my mortal guise as Dr. Victoria Starr. General, the goddess is here. This can't be. What are Hippolyta's Amazons doing here?
Seize her!
But Black Widow leaps into action, firing jolts from her bracelets.
Apparently, our new arrival is the reason you are here, ladies. And as such, she's just gained the protection of the Black Widow and my widow's bite.
You can't fight them. They're the most fiercely trained warriors in their world.
I doubt my KGB taskmasters were less demanding in preparing my curriculum steel.
Firing another sting, Widow dodges a dagger, grabs Venus, and leaps out the window on a suspended line, also fired from her bracelet.
It might indeed behoove us to seek a strategic withdrawal. Where does that leave Ivan?
You needn't concern yourself about him, Miss Romanoff. Though the Amazon are interested solely in my demise, I have nevertheless arranged his safety.
How? I think, my friend, you had best explain just who you are and why these warrior women pursue you. I don't face death out.
Meanwhile, an apprehensive cyclist traverses the UCLA campus this sunny autumn morning. In the past, he was a pawn, no, a victim of Satan. Today, he is a free man. The Ghost Rider notices frightened civilians as he rides by and changes form back to that of Johnny Blaze in order to question the civilians.
What's going on here? These kids look terrified.
Yet his freedom has made his life increasingly complicated, and he wonders why this should be so.
Turn around there, pal. There's some kind of thing back there.
He will find no relief for his puzzlement here, only danger. A tossed mace narrowly misses Blaze's head, hitting the tree behind him. Then it's a quick change back to the Ghost Rider.
Whoa, now that was a mite too close. I guess there must be a fracas in the wind. I'm starting to change, just like I did when Trapster attacked. Too bad for whoever threw that thing, because now I'm on top of fighting Johnny, the world's greatest stunt rider Blaze, he's got to deal with the Ghost Rider. Then again,
Ghost Rider gets his full view of his bizarre foe. Standing 10 feet tall, his stance wide, it's the powerful Cerberus in purple armor with a black insectoid harness complete with massive horns over his head. Only the monster's eerie orange face and one bare arm are uncovered.
Stand fast, be ye mortal or demon. By command of my master, no one must pass Cerberus, guardians of the depths, for my master will brook no interference with his plan to crush the man god.
Your master appears to be a member of the same club as an old acquaintance of mine, fella. And that being the case, he can take his plan and stuff it.
Ghost Rider extends his hand, sending off a blast of hellfire with a whoosh. In response, Cerberus shifts his form into that of a giant ebon black hellhound. Ghost Rider zooms away with the beast hot on his heels.
Yarr! The man demon strikes with a flame that burns even one such as I. But Cerberus was created to be many guardians, and what one is ill-equipped to battle, another can destroy.
Oh boy, now I get it. Cerberus, the Garden of Hades in Roman mythology, aka Bowser here. And judging from the way he's flashing them pearly whites at me, his bark isn't even in the same ballpark as his bite. I think I better vamoose leastwise until I can come up with some way of corralling this critter. One thing's for certain, this is the last time I play errand boy, even for a fellow stunt person.
A somewhat unique lecturer has come to the UCLA campus this sunny autumn morning. His subject, mythology, what it means to you. And now the heavens must rock with laughter at the monumental jest, for the speaker is none other than Hercules, Prince of Power. Inside the lecture hall, Hercules stands in just his regular costume, nearly naked, as a white-haired man in a blue suit named Richard Fenster seems overwhelmed.
Thou seem troubled, Richard Fenster. Is there any way Hercules might ease thy concerns?
Just wow. The audience tonight, Hercules, I need to score a few points with the campus brass or I could lose my thankless but so necessary job as a lecture agent.
Thou hast nothing to fear there. When I tell your young people of the glories of Olympus, they will verily swoon with wonderment.
I hope so. The last offbeat speaker I hired didn't work out too well. A real Hitchcock type. Picture a scrawny, mop-haired New York writer who spends all his time writing about some bloodthirsty barbarian he called
Mortal, what is it? Why doth fear cross your face like a bleak shadow?
Perhaps because he sees us.
A group of garishly clad mutates run into the room in tunics and helmets with large jaws, pointed ears, and cloven feet. While much smaller than Hercules, they are four when he is but one. Hercules is surrounded.
Zeus, what manner of creature art thou?
Mutates, man, god, desire to rule this planet in eons to come, but now merely your conquerors.
Conquerors, you presume too much, future men. Away, O ignominious fleas. None may hold the prince of power thus.
And with a simple flex of his muscles, Hercules sends the mutates flying. He rips the podium out of the ground and hurls it, knocking over three of the mutates, even as a mutate strikes him in the head with a mace.
There shall be payment extracted for this foul deed you have attempted, mutates. Payment in full.
You may have felled my men, Hercules, but you have yet to face the most savage mutate of all. For years I have ruled them, and in those years, only the mighty Thor has ever defeated me.
That's true. These are Thor characters coming back.
Yep. Though Hercules be sworn friend of the Thunder God, know you this. Whatever Thor canst do, Hercules canst accomplish more mightily.
Hercules grips the creature's mace, breaks it in his bare hand, then punches his foe into the wall. More mutates gather and crash into Hercules, breaking him through the wall behind, and all of them crash two stories outside onto the concrete below.
Thor had allies when he fought us, Hercules. You stand alone, and that is why you must fall before the unstoppable might of the mutates unleashed.
Ye gods, the force of their charge doth drive both myself and mine foemen through the wall. But 'twill take more than this mere plunge to still Hercules' rage. Until these base ones have been defeated, the Prince of Power fights on.
And that's when Ghost Rider happens to drive by as Hercules crams a mutate's head into the ground.
Oh shoot, that hellhound isn't giving me a chance to think. I gotta buy some time to come up with it. Hold it, if I'm not loco, that gent beating on the passel of unpleasant sorts as Hercules. Mr. Blaze, you just bought yourself an entire watch shop worth of time.
Titan's blood! What new enemy doth dare to lay hand upon Hercules in the midst of battle?
Wait a minute, partner. I'm on your side. Just swing up, grab a seat on the skull cycle, and I'll clue you in. But to give you a quick idea of what I've seen while being chased by Bowser back there, all hell's exploding around here, and I can't stop it alone.
Hercules leaps aboard Ghost Rider's cycle, gripping the demon's waist as they speed forward.
Your voice reeks with evil, mortal, yet Hercules doth sense the true valor that underlies thy tone and the urgency in thy request.
But I'm glad of that, big fella, because our hassles go way beyond the overgrown mutt and some assorted uglies. The whole campus is going crazy. Just look.
By the cloven hooves of Pan! Amazon warriors and harpies here on Earth, and among those they pursue, she who Hercules doth know as the Black Widow, and another woman who doth look strangely familiar.
I'm glad you recognize the ladies, Herc. I can put names to the gents, the Angel and the Iceman, two of the X-Men.
Down the road, the warrior women and the harpies pursue the four superheroes as they sprint away.
Do what you can for them, mortal. Hercules shall deal with yon devil hound.
Much obliged, partner. Let's see how those winged terrors react to a sudden burst of hellfire.
Hellfire scatters the harpies as Hercules hits Cerberus in the jaw. Meanwhile, Iceman hits the warrior women with, well, ice, freezing their legs in place.
Aye, flee, my sisters. This unnatural fire can destroy us.
Oh, Cerberus! Though it hath been ages since I didst vanquish you and drag you from the pits of Hades, still doth Hercules remain thy master.
Hey, the cavalry's arrived, and that's the only break we've gotten since Flybo and I ran into you, ladies. And it looks like the odds have been adjusted just enough for yours truly to cut loose.
General, we can't move.
Use your swords to hack yourselves free, my warriors, and then turn their sharp steel on those who attempt to keep the goddess from us.
Black Widow hits one of the mutates with another sting.
Oh no! Oh, the Amazons and the Harpies are recovering. And here comes a new group of playmates. Dr. Star, make a run for it and...
No, Warren. I think it's time I lent a hand here. Miss Romanoff, can you delay them for a moment? Warren, fly me above our attackers.
You're the boss, Doc.
You're not the only one harboring a secret identity, Warren. The woman you know as Victoria Star is really the goddess then called Venus. And with golden girdle, Cestus, around my waist, I have the power of love over man or god. Though, it appears my power affects these strange creatures differently than I had anticipated.
I gasped at your revelation and everyone was so surprised. I'm sorry, I scared people. above the crowd, the goddess of love blankets the area in little psychedelic hearts.
That shining light, it causes my mind to reel. I cannot stand. Oh.
Well done, my cousin. Thy power hath rendered all our enemies immobile, though given time, I would have accomplished the same end. And art thou unharmed, fair Natasha?
Unharmed, but incredibly confused. Hercules, what is going on here?
Black Widow speaks for all of us here.
Apparently, our foes were seeking to capture me for some reason.
You can hardly blame them for that, but the ghost guy said Cerberus and the mutates were after Herc.
Do you think there's somebody else involved in this? Somebody running the whole Megilla?
Suddenly, the group is hit by a blast of energy. A voice shouts at them from the sky as if God himself was speaking, and he is.
Thou art indeed a base fool, winged one. Of course, there be someone behind the weaving of this day's events. Someone with the power anon to smite you all with a single blast.
Arrgh!
That blast was powerful enough to drop all of us. I feel like all my strength has been drained out of me.
You're not kidding, lady. I feel like I've been run over by a Mack truck. Look, there's another one of those holes appearing, just like the one the Amazons charged out of, and inside...
It can't be.
And why not, Venus? Art not thou a goddess of Olympus here on Earth? Wouldst thou deny the same to thy fellow?
Villains! Thou hast perpetrated thy final scheme upon the Prince of Power! Thou will be...
Silence! So prattling man-god, for this day I bring thee a decree from thy own father, our Lord Zeus.
The new hole opens, and first we see a wall of flame behind them, and in step three larger-than-life Olympian gods, fresh from the hole. I'm taking it too far. Pluto, god of the underworld, dressed in blue and black. Ares, the god of war, in brown, blue, and gold, a sword in his hand and a mohawk on his head. And Hippolyta, a blonde goddess in pink, white, and gold, kobold, also with a sword. Pluto addresses the hodgepodge heroes.
Heed the words of Pluto, Hercules, for the dread leader of the underworld doth merely echo the words of Zeus. Before this day is done, thou shalt wed Hippolyta, queen of the Amazons, and serve loyally as her prince consort. And thou, my dear Venus, will likewise become the spouse of the war god Ares. Shouldst either of you resist these matches, the universe dies.
To be continued. Wow. Dun, dun, dun. And that is the very quick read of Champions number one, which is a wild issue. We're going to just talk about some of our feelings and reactions about characterization. This is basically a storyline about five random superheroes who happened to be at UCLA at the same time that they were trying to capture Hercules and Venus to make them wed people against their will. That's the whole plot line.
It's a rom-com.
Let's begin with our opening pair, the very confused young heroes, Angel and Iceman. Now, I don't know, for those of you that are queer, did you ever have that like straight best friend who like is always acting very gay around you? He's like super flirty and like, but like it never crosses the line. But then you have those friends sometimes that don't realize they're doing that. And then there's other times you're just like, how do you not know? And that's Angel's energy in all of this while Bobby's pretending to be straight. I would love to hear your thoughts, Mike, on what it was like to play Warren Worthington in his UCLA days.
I've always been accused of being like a 70s playboy, so it was really easy to just kind of fall into that role. I have misplaced my red headband, though, so it was a little shocking to have to kind of proceed without the whole attire.
What are your thoughts on this costume for Angel? This is ketchup and mustard color combination. It's so crazy.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen this costume before. Like I said, I definitely have not read this issue or seen this issue of this comic until just like 45 minutes ago. So it was a little surprising. I know that, you know, Warren is kind of drawn to some scandalous kinds of things, but this was on another level.
Warren's like very concerned about Bobby's secret identity while he just no longer has one. This is the issue where he finally like kind of comes forward as a public figure, which is huge for his continuity later.
The closet, you would say, right, Chad?
You might say that, yes.
Was this his first costume without a mask ever?
I believe so. Well, he had the blue costume with the halo that like was around his face, but there was nothing on his face.
Oh, that was the Neil Adams one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Scott, what are your thoughts on Bobby Drake on scholarship from Professor X to UCLA for his accounting degree?
I have a feeling this wasn't the first time Bobby encountered a mysterious hole in 1970s LA. It's a very strange time for Bobby because he's the only one who doesn't really have anything going on. Like Warren's there for sort of shits and giggles. Warren has more money than anyone. Scott and Jean are back at the mansion. Hank's off in the Avengers, and Bobby's just like, hey, I'm going to be an accountant and go down to West Hollywood. It's a weird time.
Before they jump into action, Angel goes, face it, this flyboy popsicle combination just isn't cut out to do somebody else's thing. And I want to know what their thing is.
Holes.
Puns.
Yeah, and bad puns. I like their little nicknames for each other. Like Bobby's calling him Wings.
Oh, I need more Warren Bobby team ups. But like, I need like written in the 70s for some reason with like 1940s slang. That is like just peak for them, I think.
When you add in that Anthony Oliveira pride story where like Bobby's so in love with Warren, who's like this like specimen of like physical perfection and he's so fucking lonely. And then you picture yourself closeted in college, and this story hurts a little bit. Like, it just hurts your heart.
Well, I wasn't gonna cry, Chad, but now I'm gonna.
Yeah.
This kind of seems to be, and Scott, I don't know if you agree with me here, kind of the first time that Bobby seems to be written queer. And it wasn't the writer's intention at the time, at least for a while more, but they start to play on Bobby being different and keeping secrets from his parents. And then, like, you just read it as queer the whole time. It's great.
Chad, what are you talking about? X-Men number one, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, he goes, ew, girls.
Right. But he was Leave It to Beaver in 1963. This is Bobby in his like tortured college era.
Right. And like within the context, even like Warren referencing Bobby's just like horrible parents, and so much of Bobby's character arc is him coming to terms with, again, I cannot emphasize enough, horrible parents. And this is, yeah, this is very like closeted Bobby.
He's delightful. Then we jump to Natasha Romanova, the Black Widow, who is her introduction here is a very weary woman gazes out the window. And Bennett like describes her like four times, like she has no choice but to be an individual. She has no choice but to leave her man behind and be bored in her leotard and skirt in this office now looking for a job. Christy, what are your thoughts on Natasha's journey in this issue?
I mean, yeah, that's like the fate of every unwed woman of a certain age, right? If you can't nail your blind lawyer vigilante boyfriend down to give you a ring, you end up teaching Russian at UCLA, your only qualification being you speak Russian, which, if I mean, there's probably a lot of people in LA that could get that job then, you know, like, but yeah, no, this is a choice for her. I would love it personally if I walked into a Russian class and like Natasha Romanova was there as my teacher. That'd be my favorite class.
Her continuity as it existed at the time, she married a Russian cosmonaut who died in action. That's the character who becomes the Red Guardian, who's like in the Thunderbolts film now, right? Like Alexei Shostakov. Then she gets sent as a Russian agent to the United States in her like black veil and like seduces Hawkeye into committing crimes for her. Then she joins the Avengers and gets her like red hair, black leotard era for a bit. Then she has the second wave feminism journey of, I can't do anything except follow the dictates of my own heart. Can you imagine dating Matt Murdock? She convinces him to move to San Francisco for a while. They date for a bit. And then she's like, buddy, I'm done. Like, I can't handle your shit anymore.
Therapy.
She goes
deal
back
with
to
that
her
Catholic guilt.
So she goes back to her old father figure, Ivan Petrovich, who we later learn has like basically raised her since World War II. And future continuity will show us that he has sexual feelings for the Black Widow, which is very uncomfortable. So this is a whole era for Natasha. Like, Kristen delightfully voiced.
It is, to me, like the history of a lot of like long running women comic book characters is sort of the history of comics trying to figure out how to deal with women who kick ass and are superheroes. Like, how do we have them embrace their power but also want a boy? How do we have them, like, you know, survive in a world but also like be domestic? They're always so defined by their relationships with the men around them, and that's kind of a bummer. And, you know, I know like we've, you know, moved on from a lot of that or tried to, but it's interesting to like hear it sort of broken down in terms of like, you were with this person, now you're with this person. Oh, and that guy you thought you were your dad? No, he's just kind of into you, I guess. And that's pretty bad.
I love that she shows up for her job interview in her like skin tight leather with a skirt on. Like,
she's gonna get that job. You dress for the job you want.
She's very mindful. She's very demure. Kevin, no. Your Russian accent, your fucking face was cracking me up because you got this. You're talking. It's delightful, my friend.
A friend of mine who was Scottish used to tell me, he goes, the easiest way to try and do a Russian accent is just say the word broshes and galoshes, and that'll get you into it. So that's galoshes? What I was doing while I was. Yeah, galoshes, like, you know, okay. Rubber boots. This is very old school, but galoshes is a good word for it. So that's how you get into the accent. And then it's so legit and very real.
Between Colossus in the X-Men shows and Black Widow here and with Ivan or Yvonne, we're going to get a lot of Russian on the show this year, which is delightful. Okay, then we jump over to the incredible character Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider is a 1950s Marvel character, kind of a cowboy guy. Like, he's a guy on a horse who does spooky shit. And then they revive him in Volume 2 in the early 70s. This is a brand new character. Johnny Blaze is a stunt rider, and he makes a deal with the devil. There's a whole origin story, but he's tapping into Marvel's new line of horror comics, where we get like Werewolf by Night and Frankenstein and the Tomb of Dracula. This is a fun character. Michael, hearing you read him with a Southern accent is not something I expected, but it's perfection. Are you a John Blaze fan? Let me hear what it was like for you to play this character.
Not particularly, no, I wouldn't say so, but I was reading through it and he said partner quite a few too many times for me to feel like he didn't deserve any other accent, so we had to go Southern. I'm very unaware of this character for the most part, so reading this and seeing that he's just like a creepy older man dressed in all leather driving around college campuses was kind of crazy, but not what I was expecting for old Johnny Blaze, but there we go.
The 70s Ghost Rider run is crazy. It's this kind of zany. He's fighting villains like the Water Wizard and the Witch Woman. Like, it's it's just truly crazy. It's fun. And then we get to see like a skull-faced Ghost Rider on a team with Angel and Iceman, Hercules and Black Widow. Like, the combination here is just nuts, right?
Apparently he knows the men. He was like, the women? No clue. Good for you. But the boys, I'll tell you about Angel and Bobby. I gotta, like, has he met up with them in the past? Or what's, is he just reading the current books? What's going on? Why does he know who the X-Men are, but no one else?
And then we jump to Hercules, who is here guest lecturing about mythology. Okay, there's this really infamous story from Avengers Academy, if you've read it, where Hercules is called by Hank Pym to guest lecture at the Avengers Academy to teenagers, and he wants to teach them about the Olympics, and he strips fully naked to, like, wrestle with them in the, like, Olympian field. This is how we did it back then. And they're like, oh my God, my eyes. It's fantastic. Sean, do you think Hercules is a good lecturer?
Well, dressed up in that outfit to lecture college students, yeah, I think he's great. He's definitely qualified for this position. He probably just talks about himself the whole time. I actually was finding, like, it difficult to voice him because he's always like an 11. He just stays at an 11. He never comes down. So I was like, how can I vary up these lines? I can't.
He gives very, like, Elvis impersonator energy almost. Like, can you imagine the students walking in and, like, here's this man dressed in cosplay to lecture, but it turns out it's the actual fucking Greek god of power, which is...
And now he's sleeping with a man, and I love it.
Canonically bisexual Hercules. Yeah, he's really fun in this series. Did you have a favorite line?
I really liked when he was talking about, like, comparing himself to Thor. Like, whatever Thor can do, I can do better. It was just so, like, bitchy and so, like, why are you saying all this?
So the team is never called the champions on the page, but we have five superheroes launching into a new era of 1970s Marvel. The lineup is a little jaunty at first. It's kind of odd. The first three issues are one collection, and then they start fighting, like, recession here villains, and, like, more, like, Russian characters come in. This is where Darkstar shows up. Then they're fighting Sentinels. Like, this champions run is all over the place. They never even call them the champions in this issue, though. Before we jump to the villains and plot lines, do you guys have any comments on this roster? This is a fun random roster.
I kind of love it. It's very much that era of Marvel where they were like, well, yeah, let's just throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. And Ghost Rider, Black Widow, two X-Men that, you know, Chris Claremont isn't using over in the, you know, all new, all different run. And, you know, Hercules, why not? Like, it's I don't think I've ever seen any superhero roster that Marvel's done that's been this nutty since maybe Next Wave. That, like, came out in, what, 2006? 20 years later or 30 years later?
Occasionally you get one of those that's like the Thunderbolts, or, you know, there'll be like an event group of villains where they, like, are in a limited series for a minute, right? But yeah, this is an odd thing to launch as a brand new hero group. Of course, the name Champions is still being used in comics. It's become kind of synonymous with youth in the more modern interpretations of this.
This is like the most 70s, like, group of all 70s, because as we're, like, discussing this now, I'm realizing, like, the Black Widow stuff is very like 1970s Russian gymnast couple. Like, you know, the Olympics were such a big thing in this period, and especially Russian gymnasts and mentors and teachers, and the whole idea of the Evel Knievel slash stunt, like, motorcycle thing was such a big thing in this part of the 70s. And even the, like, idea of the Greek god thing, but, you know, between Clash of the Titans and all of those, like, Sinbad, like, claymation-y movies that were all happening in the 70s, this, like, feels so much of its time, and they're shoving it all together and being like, you like these things, don't you? They're all from this period, right?
The only thing it's missing from the 70s is, like, Warren and Hercules need more chest hair on the cover, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, I did like that Venus is included, but I thought it was funny. She, like, Sailor Moon transforms into, like, a tennis outfit as her superhero costume.
So Venus is an interesting character in Marvel's lexicon. Marvel had some female-led titles in the 40s. Venus was a character who had her own title or set of adventures in the 1950s. It's very obscure. It's not often used. We could totally do a Venus episode of the Patreon sometime, I'm sure. It'd be fun to go back and read those. But she's the goddess of love. She's the Care Bear. She, like, flies into the sky and, like, frees her unicorn horn to, like, zap everyone below with a little emoticon heart.
It's so interesting because I feel out of my own element in a lot of ways, just because, like,
what, we didn't typecast you as the virgin?
No, it's like this is goddess of, like, love, and I'm over here like, ew, gross. But it was fun to kind of step into something that was different, because I feel like a lot of times I get very comfortable, so it was fun and interesting to, like, see her, like, kind of trying to be, like, behind the scenes, but also, like, realizing, like, oh, I do have to kind of step up and help out here. So that was an an interesting kind of like very quick progression for her. It was nice. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
So we sometimes forget that Olympus is a full, like, playable level at Marvel Comics, right? Like, there's a whole roster of, like, Greek gods who have their own designs and mythology. There's some fun stories about Hercules over the years trying to combine, like, wait, where does the comic book legend fit in with the original Olympian legend? Now, Pluto is a delightfully camp, like, deep drama, like, fucking Phantom of the Opera level villain. He is so much all the time, and he's so fun.
Thank you very much for casting me as Originally, I was going to do him as James Woods from the Disney Hercules, but James Woods is truly a terrible human being, so not going to evoke him at all. But I decided, because I did a gravelly voice for the Mutate, I was just going to do my voice for Pluto, because why not? I've got a little bit of that underworld-like vibe going on anyway. But his quasi-Jack Kirby costume with like the receding hairline, I mean, what a look. I'm not mad.
So in Olympus, Zeus is in charge. He has a long history of toying with mortals, but Hercules is always the favored son, right? Ares has become a character that people love very much, and Hippolyta is another character that has become kind of beloved. She takes on a superhero identity as the warrior woman. She's part of like the Shield Maidens and the Fearless Defenders era. So both of these characters have had some fun spins as heroes. Ares was on the Avengers for a long time, but basically the plotline, as we're going to see it play out in the next couple of issues, Pluto sits down with Ares and Hippolyta and realizes that they can catch Zeus in a trap. Basically, they found like a loophole in his law that if he makes these people marry, then Pluto can like take over Earth. That's basically the plot line. We'll see it expand a little bit, but this is Zeus like, I have no ability to control anything, so you guys have to marry the people you don't want to marry, and they truly don't want to. They just want to go fuck people on Earth. Both Venus and Hercules are not interested. And then they like bring in all the flunkies. We got things like Mutates and Cerberus, the three-headed dog, and we've got harpies flying around and Amazonian warrior women. Sarah, what was it like for you to jump into the world of Olympus?
It was fun. I really enjoyed how Angel, I think Angel and Iceman both were like ugly and like... They just were a little harsh with the harpies, but yeah, they were terrifying. Got to kind of use my mom, like bedtime story voice with those characters.
Very Saturday morning cartoon.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then we've got Cerberus. Kevin, that was a delicious voice, which probably left you with a sore throat.
I've been drinking tea since, if you notice. That's why I'm drinking all this tea. Like, I smoked a pack of cigarettes for that. I was really hoping, though, like in a true 1970s way, that he would transform into three different things. He only transforms once. I'm like, if he's going to be Cerberus, he should have three forms. And I wanted like a Voltron moment where he like becomes like something else. So a little disappointed in that.
I mean, seeing Hercules on the back of a motorcycle, not mad at that either.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of like Bronze Age Marvel horror, and Ghost Rider being on this team is conceptually just really funny, because Ghost Rider comics are horror oriented comics where he's, you know, his father-in-law makes a deal with the devil and is trying to kill him, and it's this whole thing. And just the concept of him and like Bobby Drake sitting down and just having like a conversation, it's just like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? Like, this is, no, don't interact.
In the past, he was a pawn, no, a victim of Satan. Today, he is a free man, and that is not the case. If you've ever read a John Blaze comic, that's not what's happening.
No. Reading this, I was just like, this man really wants you to know he's from hell. He's like, my hellfire, I was in hell. Oh, Cerberus, I know where he's from. Oh, you're just like that other guy from hell. Like, I was like, damn, this girl has problems.
And everyone's so casual, like, oh, here's this guy with a skull for a head. No big deal, it's fine.
I mean, but he can, like, hang with, like, Bobby and Warren. He gave himself, like, the best middle name ever. The world's greatest stunt writer. Like, Johnny, the world's greatest stunt writer, Blaze. He can hang.
It's right there on the posters.
Yeah.
Also, the clouds of smoke behind this man's motorcycle. Like, there is pollution in the world, sir.
I mean, it is LA in the 70s. Like,
yeah,
that's...
They did not think about that at all. Yeah.
No. Do we have other favorite moments?
That cover. Can I just talk about the cover for a second? Because that's why I started reading this way back. I probably read this probably in the like early 90s, late 80s. And it was literally my little gay heart being like, who is this big strapping dude on this cover just doing his thing? It did its job and it drew me in. I got to tell you that. I've been a fan of Hercules ever since.
Yeah, I love the cover too. I mean, Gil Kane was doing some awesome work back then because he also did the cover of Giant Size X-Men number one. You see like the team kind kind of together. And sometimes those kind of covers get very cliche. I don't know. It's very dynamic. It's nice use of blocking. I think it's a lot of fun. And just like Kevin, I read this a long time ago in some reprint Marvel, like way back when. I thought it was crazy then. And I think it's even crazier now.
Now, we've done a couple script readings on the show. We've been reading Claremont's X-Men. We also did Beast in the Avengers and now Champions with Angel and Iceman. And this is a little bit, it's interesting for those of you that follow the show regularly, compare the quality of work. I am not saying that the Avengers and Champions runs are not delightful because these are superhero comics in the 1970s and they're so joyful. But Claremont's work starts to very quickly distinguish itself as taking issues that are very serious and very real. This is like, the god must marry the woman he doesn't want to or I will control the earth, you know? And Toad's like putting exploding balls in a Wrigley Field for the Avengers to jump around. But the X-Men, it gets serious. You can start to see why the tonal quality and the value of the X-Men quickly increased.
I was able to see actually sort of the through line with Bobby in particular from the Bobby of the Champions, the Bobby of X-Factor in the 80s, because Bobby is one of the few of the original five who's really not written by Claremont. And you really just sort of see it's the same goofy Bobby by the time you get to X-Factor, and everyone else has gone through all of these like massive sort of Claremont changes and drama. And Bobby's just like, hey, I was out in LA, like doing stuff. How are you guys? And it is a bit of like a tonal change. And I think that also sort of reinforces Bobby's whole thing of not really growing up, you know, obviously unintentionally because it's editorial, but it is interesting because it's like, this is very much X Factor Bobby already.
Yeah, I feel like they're protecting them in a way. Like you see Iceman and Angel being taken out of the dark story area and shunted off to the Champions and then Defenders later, where it's like they're kind of being protected because it's almost like they're too pure a character to deal with what's coming. Like, I don't know if it's because Angel represents, you know, like Bobby's innocence and Angel is like this purity or something of that sort, but they kind of pull them out of it.
Yeah, the interesting thing here too is if you listen to Avengers and this, these are all entirely white rosters. Again, some of the characters are Greek or Russian, but Vision, I think, is the only exception. Vision's a synthezoid who you can often read stand in a way as a character of color. But the X-Men, it's Storm and Nightcrawler and like international superheroes, right? So it's a very different vibe and you start to see that change as well.
Gonna applaud you on your creation of group nouns. It's a true skill.
I thought I gotta do something. These narrators in the 70s are really punchy, so I feel like I have creative license to like add things. They're like very in on the joke. They're like making fun of the characters a lot. It's a very fun narration style. So thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm gonna steal a bustier of Amazons, so.
I'm like, I'll credit you. Group of Amazons. As we are wrapping up our thoughts, this is not a particularly deep issue. It's a silly, fun, kind of almost Silver Age-y feel, but it launches our heroes into a whole new era, and it's really fun, because here's the thing we haven't said yet. This is Marvel's gayest team ever up to this point. This team is so gay. Everybody's a little bit bisexual. Everybody's a little bit queer. I think Natasha is not necessarily canonically bisexual, but she gives real bisexual vibes. Hercules is bi.
Angel, as a bisexual, like, I will choose our team.
Yes, yeah. Angel is like B all the way down to his crotch. Everybody's flirting a little bit. Like this is a queer team. Later we add Darkstar, which doesn't make that any different.
Angel calls Bobby Tiger. Hey Tiger, you're Tiger.
So straight.
And just all the holes popping up, like it's a lot.
the portals of this issue do so much heavy lifting as like a narrative device. Like the plot, it hinges on portals.
It's a lot.
Also look at all the villains. I mean, Cerebus, when you first see him, I mean, that is not a straight villain. And then when he becomes a dog, he's somehow even gayer.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
What? Like purple. I mean, first of all, you know, the gayest.
There's an odd thing. Okay, so this is set at UCLA, right? And it's the early
the gayest 70s. Of universities.
It's like, yeah, queer university, but it's also like post-Vietnam protest college era and like sexual revolution, like fucking burn your bra and like peace and love and, you know, flowers in the gun. Like it's that energy. There's random holes popping up everywhere. And it almost seems to be like a sex metaphor. Like you hope that the beautiful Amazonian women will be the thing that pops out of the hole, but it might be a dog or a pack of harpies or like some mutates. You don't know what hole you're going to get until
just
you're
like dead. College.
there's an odd metaphor for students, I think, here in an interesting way as well. And we stay at UCLA for a while. Like, this is like a team on the beach for a bit. So it's fun. This is also the first team that Warren Worthington gets to like fully fund with his riches because his parents are dead. And in a couple issues, he inherits their entire fortune, which then sets him up for X Factor and Cameron Hodge and everything that is to follow. So some groundbreaking stuff here. I had a delightful time with each of you. As we're wrapping up, let us know where people can find you online. Is there anything you want to plug? We're going to follow up on the Champions and the Avengers next script readings in June for Pride Month, which is great because they're both super gay. So I'll follow up with this group for those that might like to return. I love the idea of these ongoing ensembles. You can follow the show @GrayMalkin_Lane on Instagram. And let me just thank this very talented group of nerdy friends that I love hanging out with. I'm so happy you are all here.
Kalen Bhatia, I'm one of 5 co-hosts of Homo Superior Podcast, where we offer a smart analysis and dumb jokes weekly about the X-Men and the MCU. Follow us on Homo Superior Podcast on Instagram. And final thoughts, I love playing a campy villain like Daddy Pluto here.
Hey, I'm Sarah Starshine. You can catch me on Instagram. I will be at AwesomeCon. That's my next convention. So you can see me there.
Great to see you, my friend.
Mike Rossi. I'm on Instagram at illustrator.mike. Final thoughts. I'm going to have to start calling people Tiger, I think. Channel my inner angel and just drop the Tiger bombs.
Hi, everyone. I'm Num1 X-Men Cosplay on Instagram. Catch me at BlurredCon and then AwesomeCon with Sarah. This issue is really fun. I'm really excited to see where we get to go after this. I'm going to do a deep dive of Champions now so I can be ahead.
It's real silly.
My name is Michael Hamm. You can find me at Hammy73 on Instagram if you like the more risque stuff, or michael.ham.cosplay if you're more interested in the cosplay stuff. Final thoughts are thank you for letting me play someone with a Southern accent, because I'm not sure when I'll be visiting any of those states from Canada anytime soon.
So. Well, in Champions number 2, you will.
Oh, no.
I'm Kevin Canary. You can find me on Instagram for now. I'm at KAKINIRY. I'm also on Blue Sky, but I hardly check it. But I will be at the Uncanny Experience in July, where I have a blast of a time, and I recommend everybody go to that, because if you like the X-Men, that is the place to be. I love these podcasts and these readings most of all. They're near and dear to my heart, and anytime I can have one line and make a sound effect, I will do it for you, Chad, anytime. But my favorite thing, I will say, Sean, your Hercules delighted me throughout that.
Thank you.
The ridiculousness of that number 11 performance was great. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Sean Fred. I come from Solving for X, an X-Men Task podcast. We're going through all the cartoons and shows. We're currently on X-Men Evolution Season 2. If you haven't already, Chad actually helped us out with Too Mutant to Handle back in December, where it's basically what if the X-Men were put onto a dating show on Netflix. Anytime you need me to voice Hercules, I'm here, because I love this cheesy son of a bitch, Tiger.
I'm Christy Porter, a sometimes writer, sometimes journalist, sometimes cosplayer, sometimes producer, always a nerd. You can find me on Instagram at Porter Geeks Out and on Blue Sky at Christy Porter. I think I'm going to steal Flyboys and Popsicles. Hey there, Flyboys and Popsicles. I think that's how I'm going to sign on to everything from now on. And please bring me back for more silly voices. So.
Yes, Christy's also one of my favorite people in real life. We live in the same city. It's so great to see you, my friend. And then lastly, Scott.
Scott Free, most social media platforms. Next con will be AwesomeCon. I'll also be at AwesomeCon at the Uncanny Experience table. I'll be Brian Braddock one day, Captain Britain. So say hi. I will not have my glasses, so I won't be able to see you, but you should still say hi.
Well, the world still needs Champions, everybody. It is 2025. We continue to enter the world on this show in an attempt to create joy to balance out all of the chaos. So thank you all, my friends, for smiling with me this evening. What a lovely diversion. I had a blast. I can't wait to hang out again soon. And we will see you back here next time on the Gray Malkin Lane Show. Thank you for listening to Gray Malkin Lane. We hope you are enjoying this podcast. Gray Malkin Lane is produced and recorded in Salt Lake City, Utah, with music and editing done by my husband, Michael Bell, and promo art done by the incredible Seth Martell. Look for us on Patreon, where we are releasing weekly episodes about obscure characters and facts. It's a great way to participate with the podcast for only just a couple of dollars a month, and it helps support what we are doing here. Also, the best way you could help Gray Malkin Lane is by sharing and liking and subscribing, but also please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We'll see you back here next time on Gray Malkin Lane.